This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, there are a chosen few that will stand against the vampires, the demons, and the forces of darkness. These are the voyages of the crew of Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
And welcome to another hour of Sci-Fi and Scream. And tonight, the journey for this hour is by steam train. Well, almost. Or dirigible. Whatever takes your fancy. But before all that and more, a big thank you to Keza and TJ from White Noise and their Rock Against Bush. Good stuff. Political rock doesn't happen that often. That track that was played just then was Panic at the Disco with Memories, and the memory of a golden and coal-dusted past, an alternate reality, a what-if. If Charles Babbage had succeeded and steam had ruled the skies and the waves forever. Yes, what if it truly was a steampunk world that we live in today? Now, what is the definition of steampunk for those who are uninitiated into this alternative culture? It is described as thus. Steampunk, a subgenre of science fiction, alternate history and speculative fiction that came into prominence during the 1980s and 90s. Specifically, steampunk involves an era or a world where steam power is still widely used, usually the 19th century kind, and often of a Victoriana sort of feel or atmosphere, and this incorporates a prominent element of either sci-fi or fantasy. Works of steampunk often feature anachronistic technology or futuristic innovations, as Victorians may have envisioned them. In other words, based on the Victorian perspective on fashion, culture, and architectural style, and everything else besides. Now, this technology may include such fictional machines as those found in the works of H.G. Wells and Jules Verne, or real technologies like the computer, but developed earlier in an alternate history. Think Charles Babbage and his digital mechanical computers and analog computers and Ada Lovelace's analytical engine. It's often associated with cyberpunk, but a lot of steampunk people will tell you, nope, it's nothing to do with that. It's less dystopian and actually more optimistic, more diverse, and culturally more open and global, and utilitarian. Now, we like that word. So tonight on the show, I will play two interviews, one with Robert Rankin, the steampunk author and lover of the humble Brussels sprout, and I'll also play a pre-record with Sarah M. Harvey, an author and steampunk costume artist. And but wait, there is more. I will break it down for what you may have heard of as the new ghost film to beat all ghost films. It's the new James Wan and Lee Whannell film project, Insidious. It's all about, or what is it supposed to be about? I will tell you more later on the show, on Sci-Fi and Scream, and on Joy 94.9. So, now, a bit of steampunk music, and this is Abney Park with White Wedding. Why am I playing this? Why not? We had a big royal wedding over the weekend, and this is just to, I guess fondly think of that. You're listening to Sonia on Joy 94.9.
Hi, this is Tom O'Panikid, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Well, the quality of that was pretty crap. Sorry about that, guys. That was supposed to be Abney Park with White Wedding. But maybe we'll leave our memories to the wonderful original by none other than Billy Idol. So what I'll do next is we will go straight into that interview with Mr. Robert Rankin. This is Sonia on Joy 94.9. To author Robert Rankin. Robert Rankin is an author, but he's also very British. In Australia, he's here for one of the biggest sci-fi popular culture conventions in the Southern Hemisphere, and that is Armageddon 2011. Robert Rankin.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me.
Fabulous to have you talking to us all the way from Sydney. Looked up on the web, I've done a little bit of research, and I see you've been very prolific, and not just writing, but you also perform in bands.
Well, I've published for 30 years now. This is the actual anniversary of my first book, and I think it's given me the opportunity to do lots of other things. People invite me to do things like, host award ceremonies, and they ask me to come to Australia. I think the perks of doing what I do within the genre I work in is there are many, many perks. That's why I'm chatting to you this very morning.
In 2009, you were created the first fellow of the Victorian Steampunk Society in recognition of your unique contribution to the genre.
Oh, that was absolutely wonderful. I'd written a book called The Witches of Chiswick, which was a sort of a rewrite of Victorian history, and, you know, I'd reimagined the Victorian times as the way it should have been. They should have had spaceships, and they should have done all those things that you sort of Jules Verne and H.G. Wells. And so when this book was published, these people contacted me and said, oh, you know, you've written a great steampunk novel, and I'd never heard of steampunk. I didn't know what it was. And they explained it to me that it was this wonderful sort of reimagining of Victorian times where people dressed as Victorians, which is something I've done for half my life, and they upgraded it with sort of all the wonderful sort of Victorian science fiction. They had Victorian science fiction ray guns, you know, and ladies in brass corsets and all this sort of thing. So they said, would I like to come along to one of their events? I said, God, yes, I certainly would. And only the year before, we'd had a Victorian wedding in London, and so this really had enormous appeal. So I went along to it, and, oh, these people were just heaven. They're wonderfully behaved, charming people, beautifully dressed, the whole thing. It was set in Lincoln, which is a very beautiful city in England, and I just thought, oh, I'm at home here. And then they honoured me by making me the first fellow of their society. Because it's a sort of a charity society, I can actually put letters after my name, and of course nobody's really given me any award in all my life. And I went, oh, thank you. So it's been absolute heaven, and I love it. So I then wrote, as a present, I wrote them a steampunk novel, which is the one that's just come out. Yes. And I didn't realise that steampunk is sort of loathed and hated by half of the science fiction community. I thought, well, everybody likes people who behave nicely, but, oh no, there are all these little evil factions, you see. So in a way, I've managed to make myself even more obscure than I was to begin with. So there you go, really.
And on Sci-Fi Squeam, we've done a couple of episodes with some steampunk royalty over here in Australia and in Melbourne, because Melbourne is, I think it's in the running of one of the steampunk capitals due to its preserved Victoriana. So we've had a bit of steampunk around the studio. Now, look, there's so many books by yourself, and the many. Some include The Brentford Triangle, which came out in 82. The Sprouts of Wrath, I love that. Armageddon the Musical.
I know, you've got to admit, that's the best title ever, isn't it? Armageddon the Musical.
Nostradamus Ate My Hamster. Now, I haven't read that one. Damn that Nostradamus.
Do I sell any books over here?
Yes.
Do I?
Yes. Well, that's why you're here, aren't you, as well? And what is it that attracted you to coming to Australia? Anything in particular?
Well, it was definitely the invite from Bill to come to Armageddon. Okay. That helped.
When you're thinking about your books, what would be one of your sentimental favourites that you've penned yourself?
That's an interesting one, because they all have a lot of significance to what my life is at the time. I'm not one of these authors who's able to detach himself and sort of write books I can't detach myself from what I do, so my books are very emotional. They always have passion of whatever I'm thinking about, worrying, are in those books. Now, the latest book, which is the one I'm kind of promoting over here, which is The Japanese Devilfish Girl and Other Unnatural Attractions, which is the steampunk book, which is set in 1895. This book, the hero is my son, George, and the heroine is actually based on my wife, so it's slightly weird and incestuous, but it is about love, and it's very much a loving book. So I'm very happy with that, because I don't look back on that book and go, oh my God, I was going through a terrible time then, you know.
Hi, it's Vincent Leneux, the director of the Vampires movie, and you're listening to Sci-Fi Squeam, Join 94.9.
Hi, this is Carrie Fisher, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
I can tell you, I was happy, you know.
What do you think is the biggest influence that's been on you?
My dad. My dad was a natural tall storyteller, and his influence is in my genes. And whereas he only told the stories, I wrote them down.
And do you have any new stories on the boil at the moment?
The Japanese Devilfish Girl is the first of a trilogy, and I've just finished writing the second one, which is called The Mechanical Messiah and Other Marvels of the Modern Age. And then I will start later in the year to write the third one, which is called The Educated Monkey and Other Wonders of the Worlds. And because it turned out that the monkey butler has proved to be the central character to books, and so he'd be the star of the third one.
The butler did it.
Yeah, the monkey butler.
Sounds awesome.
Well, every Victorian gentleman wanted a monkey butler, didn't he?
I think so, and they also had the music grinders, you know.
Yes, you've got to wear a fez.
Well, that's right, for some reason you've got to wear a little fez. So what next, Mr. Robert Rankin? What are you up to after all these Armageddons and end-of-world visitations?
Well, I want to do now is they're letting me illustrate my covers, and they're actually letting me illustrate inside the book.
Any chance of a film from any of your books?
Oh, that goes back years. I mean, honestly, that goes back 25 years. I've had people always offering films. I got two or three scripts doing the rounds at the moment, but the odds are always so stacked against you.
And The Hollow Chocolate Bunnies of the Apocalypse, I think that's probably one of my favourite titles.
That's my best-selling book because it's got the word chocolate in it.
Isn't that bizarre?
Isn't it dreadful? Isn't it? Yeah, bunnies and chocolate. Mm. And people actually said you can analyse these things because a lot of when I try and get too clever with titles, I don't sell any books. People go, I've no idea how to pronounce that, and I'm not going to buy it. I mean, the Brightonomicon. I thought most people have heard of the Necronomicon, haven't they?
I have. Then
you have, you yeah. So I've set a book about a mystical zodiac in Brighton, and I think this is clever, I'll call it the Brightonomicon. Hmm. So I meet people and they say, oh, I read your book, the Brightonomicon, and I go, yeah, right.
Is that why you did the da-da-dee-da?
Nah.
No, of course not. Look, it's been fabulous talking to you today.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
I really have enjoyed that. And do you have any advice for somebody who wants to write snuff fiction? What do you call your work? What would you...
Far-fetched fiction.
Yeah,
snuff fiction, the idea was it was fiction that when you read it, it kills you.
Yes.
Mm, yes. And my advice would be, no, don't do it.
Don't do it, because
that's really cruel. The point is that if you love what you're doing, if when you're writing, you love it more than anything else in the world, you're just having so much pleasure out of doing it, then do it. If you are struggling over every word, every paragraph, do something else.
You're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
The evil is back. Oh, I knew this would happen.
We need weapons. Damn it. I knew I should have brought my handgun.
Hi, this is Claire Kramer, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on 94.9.
Yes, indeed. This is Sci-Fi and Scream, and that was Aylstorm. Of course, they were singing Wolves of the Sea, and they are indeed called a heavy metal pirate cyberpunk steampunk band, and that's a cover of a Eurovision Song Contest song, an entrant that was back in 2008. They are definitely incredibly curious. And prior to that, we were listening to my interview with steampunk writer Robert Rankin. Now, his books are a mix of science fiction, fantasy and occult, urban legends, running gags, metafiction, steampunk, of course, and outrageous characters. And according to him, it's a largely fictional body of work. Very fascinating, eccentric English gentleman. And in 2009, he was actually created the first fellow of the Victorian Steampunk Society. So there you go. He lives in Brighton with his wife, and he's had several awards to his name, as well as that honorary title of Steampunk Gentleman. Best Fantasy, British Fantasy Society, Best Novel nominee in 97 for the Brentford Chainstaw Massacre, and SFX Online gave him Best Novel Award. He was the winner for the 2003 book, The Hollow Chocolate Bunnies of the Apocalypse, that we mentioned. Yes, he's been involved in an awful lot of things, and including Coventry Inspiration Book Awards in 2007, the Hub Best Comedy for the Brightonomicon as an audio series, and many other explorations. He's certainly been a busy man. Now, Robert Rankin actually studied at Ealing Art School with none other than his contemporary at that time, which was Queen's very own Freddie Mercury, the singer, that is. So to find out more about this intriguing gentleman, go to the official website for more, and you can visit that on www.thegoldensprout.com. What is very interesting about him, it was a delight to talk to him. He was over here for Armageddon back in February, actually. He was here, not in Melbourne, unfortunately, but in Sydney and Adelaide. And definitely coming up, I will be playing a bit more from none other than Sarah M. Harvey, who's a steampunk author. And who is she and why am I going to play an interview with her? Well, she does something that not many people do, and that is she actually writes lesbians into her steampunk fiction. Her alternate historical world are filled with lesbians and gay characters who are the heroines. So there you go. It's a different take on the alternate universe of the Victorian world and science fiction. She's also, as I mentioned, an American costume designer and an author and a non-fiction author. as well. And she has also put together multiple articles, for example, an encyclopedia of clothing through world history. She's a regular speaker, actually, on the subject of costume design at various sci-fi conventions around the country, the United States, that is. Born in San Leandro, California, and she grew up in the East Bay area of Castro Valley, California. What else about Sarah? Well, she now lives in Nashville, Tennessee, so that's pretty interesting. She's worked for Walt Disney World in Orlando, Florida, doing the creative costume department as head of that. She's also published things, books such as Labyrinth of the Dead, which came out in June of last year. Had a book called The Convent of the Pure in 2009, The Muse, and she's been involved in various anthologies over the last few years, including Twilight and Fawns, and she had a paperback novel, came out in 2006, called A Year in a Day. She's done a lot of interesting things, including interviewing none other than the steampunk princess herself from the Dresden Dolls, Amanda Palmer. Yeah. She's done or been involved in an anthology of lesbian steampunk stories. And on Subject, we talked about that in the interview that I'll play shortly. Interesting anthology that has a group of female writers, not all of them lesbians. She herself is not a lesbian as such, but she said, as you realise in the interview I'll play shortly, she has had a lot of involvement with lesbian characters and that she and her family had when she was growing up in San Francisco. So she was, I guess around the time of the Harvey Milk era. So more of that soon. But this is Sonia and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Time to do some killing.
Let's go!
Hi, my name is Gareth Edwards. I'm the director of Monsters. You're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
And welcome to Sci-Fi and Scream. This is Sonia on Joy 94.9, Australia's only LGBTIQ radio sci-fi, fantasy and genre show. I'm on the line with author Sarah Harvey, and I believe you're also a costume historian, is that correct?
Yes, that's my day job.
That's the day job, great. Okay, so welcome to Sci-Fi and Scream, Sarah.
Thank you, it's a pleasure to be here.
Right, you're in Nashville, Tennessee at the moment.
Yes, Music City, USA.
And it's really very interesting to be able to talk to a person who obviously has embraced the steampunk culture or genre, and you do it in an interesting way that you have lesbian characters within those stories. So what initially got you interested in steampunk?
I really enjoyed steampunk before I knew what it was. As a child, I loved Victorian and Old West aesthetic. I grew up in California, and my parents and I went up to the mountains a lot to go skiing, and on the way up to the mountains, of course, are all the old gold rush boom towns and the silver boom towns.
Yes.
And I fell in love with it. But I liked the sort of Jules Verne aesthetic by adding a little modern twist to it. So my bedroom growing up was all sort of Victorian modern mashup. Doing steampunk for me, steampunk was. So when the genre started to come around and I realized it was a name for what I did and what I was interested in, I was hooked. So it was a natural progression for me to get involved with it. And it's lovely. It makes a really great setting for doing fantasy because you have both the history to mine from as well as your own imagination to add in the flares and flourishes that really make your version of the world come alive.
Now, a lot of people define steampunk in different ways. How do you actually describe it?
People ask me that a lot. I really think of it as sort of a best of history. You know, you can capture your style. You can go down the line and pick up what you want out of the existing historical record, and then you can sprinkle a little in from something else, and wouldn't it be interesting if this happened instead? What has happened? What if that happened? And you sort of play with it that way and take different versions and different views, tweak it a little bit. And I kind of like the best of idea. Because steampunk, to me, although there's that punk element, does tend to present more of an optimistic worldview, where you have more of a balance, a racial balance, a gender balance. And, you know, for people who are total outliers in the world, which would be, you know, your gay and lesbian and other population, transgender and whatnot, you know, you can bring that element in and it be perfectly fine because it's steampunk. steampunk, whereas if you're doing a straight historical, you're really stuck with the sort of the social mores of the time.
And I'm amazed at the, I guess just the openness, the open-mindedness, even though it seems quite conservative on the outside because everyone thinks, oh, Victoriana, you know, repression and all of that, but I find the opposite.
Straight history, not to be sort of punny, Victoriana, you know, there's a lot of what they would, you know, lesbianism was considered sort of okay. It was acceptable for women to share a bedroom and to be very, very, very close, whereas women and men weren't allowed to do those things. That was really looked down upon. Men and women weren't supposed to share a bed because their heartbeats would get all strange and make somebody die in their sleep, amongst other crazy old wives' tales that they had.
Yeah, a very outmoded.
So, but for women to share a bed and to share a bedroom and to have that sort of intimate kind of relationship where men and women were not allowed to have, that was perfectly okay. And everyone sort of looked the other way because there couldn't possibly be anything sexual going on between the ladies, yet everybody seemed to know that there was, and it was kind of, you just sort of glossed over that. The whole women-women pairing okay, men-men pairing not okay,
not
goes back a long way.
And Oscar Wilde found out the hard way, unfortunately.
Yes.
Now, what has brought you to do these sort of, they've been called what, romance, steampunk romances and fantasy, and why have you got the characters that are gay characters? Why have you used
that? Well, I've grown up, I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, so that was never a weird thing. My very beloved aunt is gay and in a long-term committed relationship for most of my life, and so I've grown up with good, you know, good role models for all aspects.
Excellent.
Straight, gay, and in between. So that being a viable character type was, you know, completely normal to me. You know, it never occurred to me that would be weird to have characters who weren't straight, because in my life, I had so many people in my life that weren't straight and that were, you know, never ridiculed by the family, never occluded. Everybody was okay with all of that.
It seems that there are more people or more writers that are going towards using stories with a lot of LGBTIQ characters in it, which is great, and they're positive images as well. Now, can you tell us a little bit about some of your, you know, just briefly about some of your works?
Through Apex Publications, and that would be the Blood of Angels series, which is sort of a dark steampunk horror, dark fantasy series, features Quokka and Imogen, and that's something, the plot sort of started to coalesce in my head, and the two characters, you know, they were there, and they were together, and that's just sort of how it came to be. I didn't plan to write a story about lesbians, and in fact, I got very popular. I had a couple of requests for stories that were specifically about lesbians, and I had a heck of a time writing it, because then I thought, well, I can't try to make something about lesbians, it would be stupid, and then I realized I have to go at it the way I went at it with Portia and Imogen, which is from the direction, I'm going to make a great story about these characters, oh, and they just have to be into one another, you know, trying to make it about lesbians or trying to make it gay friendly. But so there's a short story also that is very different from the horror. It's more just alternate history. That one has Emperor Norton in it, and that one is also available online. It's called Steam Powered, and I'm actually going to do a series, and I just had a baby, so
congratulations. I could hear in the background.
Thank you. A little snuffling in people.
A little snuffling boy or a little girl? Oh, great.
Her name is Beatrice, and she's been very good and very quiet. She's 3 months old.
Oh, wow, that is new. Very fresh.
A story for the third volume.
Fabulous. Well, Beatrice thinks that's a good idea. Okay, lovely.
So there's a lot of different angles I'm trying to bring in, not just the scary, creepy angle, but the fun, more alternate history angle. And what's interesting about the Portia and Imogen matching and the other in the Apex series is that is the whole plot rests on their relationship and how their relationship gets tested and how much they mean to one another.
That's
really the whole emphasis of the story is what can, you know, that kind of depth of love create in you, your personal strength, and how can it affect the world around you.
Sounds wonderful. Like, I must delve in there and look that up online and actually start reading some of this, because that's very very interesting. But I like it a bit creepy. That's good. Now, what would be a favourite author? Do you have any favourites that, you know, in the top of your head that you go, look, the influence they had on me was so tremendous? Who could you pick?
Definitely Jacqueline Carey. Only is she an amazing author that just weaves beautiful beautiful world and also characters of various sexual proclivities, interests, and backgrounds. He's really a nice person in real life, in fact, and just delightful in every single way. Her books are gorgeous, and her prose is beautiful and rich and sumptuous, and she's a great influence in punk, and she writes fantasy. Sherry Priest on the steampunk side, who is in the state, her, I think her unofficial title is the High Priestess of Steampunk. She's also a good friend of mine in real life, an amazing lady.
Was over here, I think. Yeah, I think I saw her dress beautifully, and I'm pretty sure it was her.
Prose is amazing, just the opposite of Jacqueline. Barry's is crisp and fast-paced and witty and, you know, shorter sentences and just more of a whip-smart attitude with it. And so different styles, different pacing. And also Sherry is known for strong female protagonists.
Now, I've seen her books around in certain large bookstore chains. And, they look like something you can pick up. You can read within a day or two and almost like a serial type of style with the same characters again and again. So
you know, they're a quick read, but they're not, it's not like popcorn. It's not just gonna, you know, in one ear and out the other, in one eye and out the other eye. Yeah, they really stay with you, and they're very, you know, very well written, but they are fast.
Probably perfect for reading on the train, I'd say. Now, I read somewhere here too that you like Grimm's fairy tales from your childhood, or is that still a love?
Yes, when I was little, I loved picture book, and my aunt and my grandmother were trying to get me to read chapter books. So my aunt, in her infinite wisdom, bought me a book of fairy tales, thank you. But she had bought me the unedited versions with all the eyeball gouging, toe chopping, blood action. Must have been about eight.
Nightmare stuff.
I read into the first or second story, and I realized this is not the Cinderella and the Snow White that Disney was showing me. And I never told anybody that the books were actually rather violent, and I was afraid they would take them away from me. And that's sort of what got me into loving fairy tales. Oh my gosh, this is amazing stuff.
Even now.
You're listening to Sci-Fi Scream 94.9. This is Russell Edgington, the Vampire King of Mississippi. Be very careful and lock your doors.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, there are a chosen few that will stand against the vampires, the demons, and the forces of darkness. These are the voyages of the crew of Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9. Real life is scarier than anything we can dream of, and we dream such frightening things. Sci-Fi and Squeam.
Be afraid.
Be very afraid. On Joy 94.9.
Now they just stand up, obviously. I read an article very recently that said steampunk is dying. Steampunk is dead. What do you think of those sort of people that are saying that sort of thing? Do you call it a culture, a genre of its own?
Well, I think in some way it's wishful thinking because steampunk went so mainstream so fast. And a lot of people are saying that it's already sort of blown over because it has gotten so mainstream and it has gotten so socially and culturally acceptable, especially, in Europe and there. And it's sort of come out of nowhere in a very short time and really permeated in a very short time. But I think that's good because I think that we're in a position just culturally and globally, sort of connection to our past. You know, a lot of the intellect comes out of this, the do-it-yourself mentality. But in a lot of ways, I think it's just getting started in the same way that, you know, you had the goth movement, you had the, you know, actual punk rock movement, and they grow and they evolve and they bring in new people and they change. But I think that what steampunk offers in terms of the ultimate history and being able to go back and say, we know we screwed it up in real life. Here's how we could fix it and make the past not just like more palatable in a PC sort of way, but make it the past we all wish we had, you know, to say that I wish we hadn't done that stupid thing, you know, I wish we hadn't persecuted those people, I wish we hadn't sort of go back and hit the reset button and explore that what if, that alternate history of what if, exactly. Where would we be now as a culture?
Well, we would have colonized the moon by now, for sure, I think. If Babbage had been accepted or got the support he needed, who knows where it would have led. And like you said, it makes you connect with the past, because the 19th century, it might seem a long time ago, but pretty much most things that surround us still have resonance, I mean, of that era.
No matter where we are on the planet, we can all go back to that point and have a shared history. Like, we were all in the game by that point.
And indeed, that's my interview with Sarah Harvey. Now, she's a writer who does lesbian steampunk fiction, and good on her too. Now, that will be podcasted, the full actual interview, very soon. I will do that in a few days' time. You'll be able to hear the whole of that awesome interview I did with that lovely lady. We're going to do a little bit of some music now, some steampunk music. But before I do need to let you know that we were supposed to have Robert Lamal. He was talking about coming on the show, and he is the man behind the wonderful Steampump event. Now, Steampump number 2, yes, the sequel, and that's coming up this Saturday, May the 7th. Alas, Robert wasn't able to make it, but still, he's still here in spirit, I reckon. It returns, so it's at the Donkey Wheelhouse basement. More details, you can go to their website, which is now appearing on the Sci-Fi and Squeam Facebook page, so go and take a look at that. Now, the Donkey Wheelhouse is formerly the headquarters of the Melbourne Tramways and Omnibus Company. Very interesting. Building is constructed in red brick, Gothic Revival style, and dates from 1891, when cable trams were in use in Melbourne. Lovely. And apparently, the site is reported to be inhabited by several ghosts. Sounds excellent. So if you want something different to do this Saturday night, head on down there. And bare-knuckle boxing, anyone. So those are the organisers of Steampump. Check that out if you can. Here is some more steampunk. This is Vernie in Process with March of the Steam Knights.
Hi, this is Greg Capullo, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
I want to leave. I want to leave this house.
It's not the house that's haunted. It's your son.
Welcome back to the Sci-Fi and Squeam Show, and that indeed was the trailer from Insidious, the new film directed by James Wan and written by Lee Whannell. And prior to that was none other than Vernie in Process, okay, with Steampunk Knights. Now, we were talking everything steampunk, and now a different sort of kettle of fish altogether, and that is my review of Insidious. Now, this is the duo, Whannell and Wan, who delivered the Saw film franchise again and again. It's also from the producers of Paranormal Activity. Well, is it a mashup or is it a mishap? More mishap, actually. Now, the opening credits are quite promising, a reminder of how Dario Argento used to do his, you know, the screaming and screeching of the atmospheric sound effects and score, building up in a dark, gloomy, spooky tone through a gothic sort of looking building with gothic style lettering and blood red, very emboldened. And through that gloom and ghostly apparitions appear, or what could be scary ghost-like faces. Are we in for a scary, spine-chilling time? No, not actually. Quite a disappointment. It stars Patrick Wilson, Australia's Rose Byrne, the wonderful Barbara Hershey, Lynn Shay, Andrew Astor, Lee Whannell. It's brought out by Alliance Films and Stage 6 Films. Cinematography is by John R. Leonetti and David M. Brewer. Music by Joseph Bishara. Runs for 100 minutes? Yes, perhaps 100 minutes a little too long. Now, I know I'm being rude, but I couldn't help it. Now, that little list there does read a bit like a Saw franchise or a paranormal exercise, and I'm afraid I'm being cynical. This film tries too hard to be everything without the smarts. Some part of this is creature is made up of the corpse, all the remains of Jeepers Creepers, one or two, it doesn't really matter. It's part orphanato or orphanage, a tad of Guillermo del Toro production-wise. It even feels like Baz Luhrmann runs amok with 1950s-style dressed ghosts that look like escapees from Mooney Ponds, a la Dame Edna Everage, bad and heavy makeup. And even Kubrick seems to be pointed at here. But has Kubrick gone really wrong? With the tip of a hat, or a hatchet, basically, to The Shining. Just think lame Ghostbuster jokes, and I think you'll get what I mean. As far as the story itself goes, it's a mishmash. It's a car accident with no apparent survivors. An accident that's just happened. But I shouldn't speak too soon. Alas, I feel there will be franchise fodder coming from this film. I think they will do more. Now, this is amateur horror style. Excuse me. And please, can someone tell James Wan that when there is a scene where a certain scary noise in the background is supposed to be used for suspenseful device to frighten the audience, well, the trick is not to put on a screeching violin sound over the top of it. Duh, it ruins the whole effect. Surely he must have realized that when he saw the rushes. Look, I'm giving this a, on a 0 to 10 scale, it gets a 3 from me. I think back to the drawing board, boys. Try watching some Michael Haneke, or seriously watch Dario Argento's very carefully. The way he uses sound and the way he uses visuals is all deliberate and methodical and very careful. And stop going from fisheye camera to static camera to handheld jerking around camera. And maybe you should just keep a pen and a journal near your bed, guys, because I think your dreams might be trying to tell you something. And that is, you've got a long way to go. And I think there's still a lot more that you could learn from some of the horror meisters. So, yeah, it's a 3 out of 10. But look, if you want an easy time to watch a film that doesn't challenge you but has nice graphics at the beginning and the end, you'll enjoy Insidious. And it's out very soon, May 12th. That's almost a wrap from me. Now, before I leave, to all the squeamers listening tonight, it is time to snuff out the lamplight and dream of an alternate better world powered by steam and imagination. Steampunk. Now, next week, something completely different. The art of fiction in dark and horror, and some in fantasy. Queer angles, the queer writers who delve into those dark chapters we love. And to join me on that chapter next week will be award-winning writers Kirsten McDermott and Jason Narang. They will chat with me on their favourites in genre and their own works as well. Plus, I will have a review on the Aussie horror real-life thriller murder film Snowtown, which is due to come out later this month. So tune in to us next week on Sci-Fi and Squeam at 10 o'clock. Talk to you next week. This has been Sonia, and it's been a joy to talk to you tonight on Sci-Fi and Squeam.
This is Paul Cornell on Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
Just when you thought it was safe to turn on the radio, Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.